Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
The Cat Lady. You may have got lots of preconceptions about what a cat lady actually signifies. It's probably unlikely that you'd relate a cat lady to illegal guns, a dead body, and indeed other dangerous old ladies from that point of view. Well, The Desperate Cat Lady, book two of the Cat Lady series, is now out and indeed available. And we're delighted to actually welcome the creator of the Cat Lady duology at present. Two books, of course, which are absolutely awesome. The author is DC Gomez. How are you, DC?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
Well, great to connect with your good self. And again, fascinated by this particular tale, because in most cases you tend to, or maybe we culturally tend to view people who keep felines as somewhat unsuccessful, shall we say. They have their, they have their own charm, obviously, but they often get pigeonholed into a routine. You seem to, with both of these texts, have taken that stereotype and very much played around with it.
So one of those things is, how do we take something quirky? How do we take something that usually can be very, very negative? You know, where we think of a cat lady woman, you know, she's depressed, she's all that. And that's kind of how the first book started. You know, she finds herself that she's being called the crazy cat lady. She only has two cats. You know, she doesn't have this swarm of cats as most people think. But what if you embrace it? What if you go ahead and say, you know what? If everybody thinks I'm this crazy cat lady, you know, I'm going to play with it, but I'm going to make the most of it. So this one takes you on a little while of a spin. She goes from a cat lady to an arms dealer. And she goes, you know what? If Walmart can sell guns, you know, I think I can do it too. Why not?
Well, it certainly opens up a whole new aspect of life, etc. Are you a cat person yourself by any chance? Or is it a case of, no, I prefer dogs?
I have one. I literally have one cat who I think is plenty. I don't think anybody needs any more sometimes if you have mine. So it has become an adventure to realize how much of their personalities either we inherit or we give them to them. And it's just kind of like, you're not really a cat person. They just kind of own you. You're like, oh God, I have a cat. So yes.
And of course, there is the classic line that cats choose us. They choose ourselves as owners. We have no say in the matter whatsoever. We might like to think we have, but actually in practical terms, we have very little say in terms of what's going on there. So a different perspective entirely. Okay, so we're going to talk more about, obviously, the breadth of your work. But I mean, you've had a significant career already before becoming an ace author from that point of view. Award-winning USA Today bestselling author, podcaster, motivational speaker, and a whole variety of aspects within that. A master's degree in science administration from Central Michigan University and a master in adult education from Texas A&M Texarkana University. So of those particular areas, was there a pattern? Was there a choice? Was there a definite grand master plan for DC Gomez world domination that you put into place? Or is it just a case of, well, you followed your interests?
More of the later. I definitely follow my interests. I follow my passion. And it took me, I want to say 70 years to truly embrace it all. You know, I'm probably much like many people, very career focused. I had a plan and, you know, you're supposed to get a job, the house, all those things. And sometimes when you follow the right path, you find yourself being a little miserable. And I was there. I was doing all the right things. I was following all the things you're supposed to do. And yet I wasn't living my purpose. And I tell everyone, that's something inside of us that we know what we're supposed to be doing. And if we fight it so long, you're going to be miserable. So I found myself there and then finally went back to what I call home, which is storytelling, and just decided, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I feel a little like Angela. I have nothing to lose. Why not take the jump? But everything that I have done, I'm very blessed. I have enjoyed it. I just tend to have a really short attention span and I need to try something new. So that's where the podcasting came into play. I love talking to people. I love teaching. So everything now just seems to play really well with each other.
Well, you write both nonfiction and fiction books, of course. Urban fantasy, there'll be many folk who'll be particularly familiar with the Intern Diaries series, Judgment Day, which again, I think opens up a whole range of things there. In terms of the DC Gomez verse, would you ever consider actually introducing the horseman into one of the cat lady adventures?
Oh my God. One of the characters in the Intern Diaries happens to be a talking cat, which is Constantine. It's like, What if Constantine met Angela? But what if Bartholomew started selling her guns? I'm like, I don't think the world is ready for that. That was just being out of the world experience. Like, yeah, I don't think I'm ready for all of that. I'm just going to keep those two babies separate. It's too much.
It's okay. I mean, I thought I'd put it out there because obviously the multiverses are very much in vogue at present. Not just obviously with Academy Award winning movies with Everything Everywhere All at Once. So, I mean, I think it could happen. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Share with us your own particular interests in terms of urban fantasy. Were you a keen and voracious reader? Did you actually effectively always follow the classics, the Ursula K. Le Guins, the Octavia Butlers, and so on? Or was it a case of no? You just basically like to write it.
I am officially an urban fantasy fanatic. Like, I am a Kim Harrison, Jim Butcher lover to the core. Neil Gaiman has become my new favorite love. I'm infatuated with them. So this has been the genre that has been dear to my heart, is the one that I just kind of fell in love with. I grew up in Salem, Massachusetts. So magic and the witch trials has been what I grew up aware with. But having books that actually put magic in contemporary world and kind of give you the sense of where you were, you could feel it. You can be like, you're not too careful, this could happen, is really much what I grew up reading. And I love them all. I'm very much into just falling in love with the story. So writing it became, you know, write what you know. To me, it was like, write what you're passionate about, write where your heart lies. So when I started writing urban fantasy, that was a natural progression to me. Like, I have a blast. I enjoy the stories. Let's write it.
Yeah. Of course, the range of YA or young adult fiction has grown exponentially over the last quarter of a century. I well recall an interview with Ursula K. Le Guin, who actually was reluctant to get into young adult fantasy before she actually came up with the Earthsea Quartet. And again, she realized that she could actually use it as a teaching mechanism. So I'm really kind of moving into the question of, as somebody who actually is a certified meditation instructor and so on, as also somebody who effectively deals with folk overcoming those dreadful self-limiting beliefs, those self-sabotaging aspects that can be so frustrating at the best of times. Do you feel that actually part of your writing also encompasses this whole notion of rising up or producing role models, albeit fiction-based role models, that actually say that there are no limits?
One of the things that I try very hard is to bring those things into the page. I realize a lot of my characters have very common themes, and they're all searching for family. They're all searching to belong. They're all searching to be greater than they've been and trying to prove themselves to others and show people those things. Sometimes I think we take for granted that you don't have to be a superhero to be able to make a difference. You can make a difference right where you're at. You can exceed where you are just by following your passion. So I try to sprinkle those things throughout the books. I have a series, which is a children's series, is specifically designed to help little ones find out what they're good at. We take for granted that sometimes smiling can be a superpower because we know too many people who don't smile. I was like, oh, come on, you can be cheerful today. So it's all the little things that we can do without being preachy. I don't want people to pick up this book and make, oh my God, I spent 3 hours just getting lecture. But have a blast, and kind of, if you're looking for the moral, you're going to find it. If not, you're still going to have a blast.
We have so much clutter in our lives, DC, these days. I mean, so much social media forms, so much material to actually work through. That, I mean, I'm obviously somebody who grew up in the latter part of the 20th century, and I sometimes find it a tad overwhelming. When you're dealing with young people, in the under 30 bracket, for instance, do you think it's important that we still stress the notion that you do need to, A, breathe, and two, actually take time out to avoid getting caught up in all of that, and then stuff?
One of the most critical things we have seen in lately, especially in the last couple of years, that a lot of the influencers are getting burned out. There is so much of so much, and we kind of joke about it because I know as an adult, I'm in my 40s, so I'm like, I need a break. And I know that I can do that. I know that I can take a time out and everything will be fine. But when you're 20s and even young 30s, it's hard to believe that if you take a break, you're not going to be missing out, that the train's not going to pass you, that you're going to be behind something that they don't know what it is. So sometimes it's very much reminding them, it's like, it's okay. I have worked with a lot of young adults, very much 18s and 19s. They're like, everything's like, I'm going to die. I was like, no. This is only small thing in your life. Please breathe. And sometimes I think we have embraced, and I don't know in the UK, but in the US, we have made it a culture of being busy as a pride. It's like a badge of honor. It's like, I have done all these things, and working ourselves to death have become kind of the norm. So our young people don't know that this is not healthy. This is not what life is supposed to be about. And trying to get back to balance is becoming a huge thing in the States.
I think it's a huge thing across the globe, DC, to be honest, but that's another issue. Let's go back to, again, growing up in Salem, Massachusetts. You then went on to study film and television at New York University, and then you joined the Army. Now, for most people, I would have thought that wasn't necessarily a natural progression, particularly for a film and television scholar, to go into the Army, and specifically to serve for 4 years. Again, was it just a case of, well, what the hey? I've been fascinated by the Army structure. Let's go for it.
This one was actually strategic. It's one of the few things and decisions in my life that I said, no, there's a reason why I'm doing it. The ending took a different turn, but when I joined the military, I was a junior at NYU, and everybody tells you as a filmmaker, you need to write about what you know, same thing that we tell authors. When you're 21, what do you know? Like, let's be honest, like I knew nothing what to write about. I'm like, I knew what of being an immigrant and a film student. I'm like, this does not make for really good movies. So I actually ended up meeting I think he was a sergeant at the time. I went home to get my license. Yes, I'm a very late bloomer. Sorry, everyone. But he was having those conversations like, what are you going to do when you graduate? You know, what are you going to, if you're going to write about what you know, what do you know? And it became that option. It's like, A, they're going to be great. It's going to help me pay some student loans, which is huge for anybody who's listening, but also gave me an opportunity that I was going to be able to meet people. And I wanted to write stories that were real. I wanted to write stories about people and that they can connect and that have been going through struggles. Once I joined, changed my life. I joined in 2001, in July. Everybody knows September 2001 happened. And it went from writing, I'm going to be a filmmaker, I'm going to do all these things, to what am I going to do to protect my family? What am I going to do to protect the people I love? So that's kind of where that entire switch in my career took for a very long time. It became more focused on others than that passion that I had when I first joined.
We talk a great deal about the discipline of writing, and obviously the armed services also have discipline that's actually entailed. And we've spoken earlier about how it's important to take time out and not get all caught up in the clutter, etc. Did you find that as a writer, and you obviously said write about what you know, the kind of adventures that you've been putting down on the page have been helped by the discipline of, I don't know, writing 2,000 words before noon each day or whatever?
Honestly, did. It became very simple to break things into small little pieces. You know, I think the military is notorious for saying, what is your first task? What is your second? What is your end goal? So when I first started writing, I was like, I was trained in writing scripts. So writing a novel became like, ooh, how are we going to tackle this? So I did tons of research. And then I did typical training military. I did some backwards planning. How long is it going to take me to write 80,000 words? How many words do I have to write in a day? And how am I going to execute it? So I did tons of like, let's backwards plan. We're going to get this done. And I don't think I thought about it, how daunting it was. It was very much like one day at a time. I just got to do a chapter a day. Each chapter should be 2,000 words. I should be done in 2 months. Let's do this.
Let's return back to Angela, of course, the cat lady, and open up that opening line and the descriptor for the cat lady special, the first one in the series. Angela has reached the end of her rope. Bills are piling up, money is sparse indeed, and her two-timing ex-husband traded her in for a Barbie lookalike. Depression and lack of hope put her in a world filled with never-ending pain, and when she loses the one thing she has left, her will to live, she knows there's nothing left to go back to, until an unexpected knock on her door wakes her up. I must admit, initially, when you read that descriptor, you wouldn't necessarily think this is going to be an upbeat, uplifting novel of second chances and discovering your inner savior. Was that a deliberate kind of twist in the tale that you were putting together in terms of how you actually can demonstrate that actually it's oft times when we feel as though it's almost the darkest it's ever been, that's the time we need to keep on going?
It was definitely on purpose. I have been in those places, and many of us have been, that sometimes we don't know what we're going to do when we hit rock bottom. Here's the reality. You can only go up. Like once you're at the bottom, where else are you going to go? So Angela is there, and is that part of her life that she goes, I have nothing to lose. So what are you going to do? It is dark comedy. So I tend to have a disclaimer for everybody. It starts kind of dark, give it a chance because it doesn't stay there. And she has to find herself going, you've been holding to a lot of beliefs. She's been holding a lot to her reputation. What will people say? All these things that have been holding her back. And she's like, my reputation's not buying me milk. What am I going to do with myself? And she has to analyze herself from a whole different perspective. Then she has to realize that some things she's not willing to do for herself, she's going to do for her family, and she's going to fight for them. And once we hit rock bottom, we tend to find ourselves that we're a lot more resilient than we think.
So the Silverhead Gang, the kind of, in a sense, a group of senior citizens, chronologically gifted people, I'll use that term, or maybe even experientially enhanced folk of the Silverhair Gang, etc. Was that always kind of part of how you'd actually developed or were intending to put together an ensemble, as well as obviously Angela and her two cats?
Absolutely. As an adult, I realized, and I call them very seasoned members of our society, have a superpower the rest of us don't have. They can say whatever they want and people will listen. Like my mom can say things, I'm like, ouch, that's kind of mean. And we just go with it. And we all know these people that will say some things and you're like, you know, he's in that age, and we forgive them. So it is that superpower, like, nobody's going to fight with a granny. Nobody's going to say, her, no, you can't do that, grandma. So what if these women who are refusing to give up, they're refusing to believe that I'm too old to do something, decide, I'm like, you know what? We're going to go join Angela. Let's see what we got. And yes, they are a hot mess in the making. There's so much fun. And it's the fact that there is no such thing as life ends at a certain age. It's whatever you make of it.
Well, a boring life is not in Angela's future as we go to a desperate cat lady. She's a black market guns dealer. She trips over a dead body, now bringing a lot more attention from law enforcement than she cares to have. Clearly, we're already getting fans are saying, we want number three. Will there be any foreseeable end game for Angela? Is it a case of, no, I've got about 12 books lined up for her, basically.
This one is the first time that I'm going to tell you that I'll let Angela tell me. I am a plotter. I usually have, like, the Intern Diaries. I knew from the very beginning there was going to be a 5 arc. I knew how that was going to play. Each one of these books are as wild as they get because it literally, the first, like, book 2 starts with a murder. Like, she's running. Technically, Angela is helping Mimi, who's the oldest one of the character, close to 80, run and train for 5K. Angela's dying. Mimi's like, come on, girl, let's go. And Angela trips. So it's the beginning of those badness that you're going, Angela, you're going to survive this. So this series is definitely going to be, how much more fun and trouble can these ladies get while they're trying to do this illegal business? So yeah.
I can certainly see a scenario whereby the likes of Jane Fonda, Mary Steenburgen, and Diane Keane could find a whole range of activities going on here. Presumably, the opportunities provided by movie transfer deals and so on have been considered. Do you have a dream cast? I mean, who would you like to play Angela?
Oh my God. I normally have a dream cast on my Intern Diaries. I'm like, yes, this would be great. For Angela, she's so close to my heart. I'm like, oh, I want somebody who can truly feel her, that can understand what it's like to try to maintain order in the middle of chaos and still be very, very loving and giving. So I don't know. I have to think about that one. That's definitely the question. I'm like, who can play Angela and still give her like that sass that comes with her?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Viola Davis could be make a reasonable stab at it, but just a thought. I mean, she's quite busy, but what the heck? okay, we often talk, DC, about people and authors and their music. And some authors have a specific soundtrack that they feel they have to load up and play nonstop. Some people prefer just literally no lyrics whatsoever. Other people prefer absolute silence. Do you have any particular music that encourages your good self or is your go-to track when you're writing either urban fantasy or Adventures of the Cat Lady?
Usually when I'm writing, I don't have music. When I'm stuck, there's always music playing. So for my urban fantasy, it goes between hip hop because it's very action packed and Spanish, you know, reggaeton. For my cat lady, she's a little bit much more mellow. So I tend to go to old school country, very much Willie Nelson per se. I'm like, what can Angela play in that essence? Because she's still a very southern lady. So I go very old school with that. And then I play back and forth depending what how much action my books need.
Mm-hmm. switching up to your motivational speaking. There are an awful lot of motivational speakers and coaches and life coaches that are actually out in the world, and probably that indicates that we have need for them. I mean, one of my personal colleagues and friends is, as you might have heard of, from Florida, Mike Dooley, who very much sort of talks about totally unique thoughts and the whole adventurous side of things. Was that something, again, that you kind of felt actually having experienced life in the Dominican Republic, growing up in Salem, Massachusetts, obviously the wealth of other information, is it partly a case of your good self paying it forward as well as paying it back? Or was it just a case of, well, it just seemed like a good idea at the time?
This became one of those very missions to me. One of the things I realized that stopped me from writing was the belief that I couldn't do it, or that I shouldn't do it, that I wasn't good enough to write. What I realized is creators have a way of tearing ourselves down. We have a way of believing that we're not meant for this. And anytime we believe in our dreams, we tend to find five different reasons why we can't do it. So this motivation to speak is very focused on the creative world and the creative being, who tends to judge everything they do from such a small, narrow lens that we're terrified of doing it. So I had to learn to give myself. I have enough mentors having to teach me, what if you take the leap? What would happen? What is holding you back? So anytime I speak, when it comes to that part of limiting beliefs, it's the limiting beliefs that's holding you back from truly pursuing who you're supposed to be, from following those dreams. And it's very coming from that creative side of the world. Because sometimes I think, you know, you listen to motivational speakers and it's very much focused like, you know, you can be better at your money, you can do all these things. And sometimes the creative side, because it's such a soft side, people forget. I'm like, no, you have permission to write. You're meant to be a writer. You are meant to be a creative. You're meant to be an artist. What is holding you back? And that's really my focus for this.
We're currently using the joys of technology to communicate across the Atlantic Ocean, across the big pond, from Lincoln, England, all the way through to your own base. Are you currently based in Massachusetts, or have you moved on since then?
I'm actually in Texas. My family's still in Massachusetts, but I'm literally across the country, or midway through the country in Texas.
So there you go. So you're in Texas, which is obviously the Lone Star State and so on. Do you feel that technology is something which is aiding the author? Or are there any times when you feel, I wish I could actually produce this material in a solid typewriter format, as used to be the case for great authors of the 20th century?
It is definitely an aid, but sometimes a little scary, let's be honest. 90% of authors are introverts, and now the world is asking us to put ourselves out there. You know, people want to know who the author is before they buy the book. They want to know more about your passions, what got you creative. Are you a problematic author? Are you going to be delivering everything you say? And you're going, now I have to be in front of the cameras. I have to be in front of people. It is a blessing as long as you embrace it. Is this scary? It can be terrifying. Let's be honest. You have much more opportunities for people to take shots at everything, kind of going, I don't like your hair. I'm like, I know it's curly. I'm sorry. My bad. But you can still have a blast if you embrace it.
And are you ever tempted to actually just pick up the traditional quill pen, or indeed ink pen, and actually get your thoughts on paper? Or are you a straight to keyboard author?
I actually start with a pen. I don't know. I'm very old school. I have little index cards everywhere. I have little cards all over the place. I have to do all of my brainstorming on paper. Just because before, I think the last step I do is usually pick up a pad and start typing, because my mind just kind of functions that way. I draw notes, I have little arrows, I have sticky pads. The whole entire process to me is very much, I need to feel it, I need to touch it, I need to be involved with it. And then I get back to and start actually writing it.
The world is a big place, fairly self-evidently. Are there any particular countries that you've ever been tempted to actually either write about or cover, or indeed would like to visit?
I am usually really lucky because I tend to write about the places I know. So I had literally 2 weeks ago took the trip of a lifetime. So I was in Australia with Rory. I'm a Rotarian. So we had our international convention. So I got to be in Melbourne for a week. So I'm trying to figure it out. I was like, how am I going to add Australia to my list? So yes, I'm always looking for locations, always looking. Google Earth is amazing. But there's nothing about like the experience of going to a place and going, that's what people are eating. This is how people are behaving. This is what makes them tick. So I'm always on the lookout. My next big adventure would definitely be Europe, and actually spend some time just to visit and just to embrace it, and then figure out how to write about it.
So Europe, obviously, a compilation of all sorts of countries, not only obviously Great Britain and Ireland, of course, but obviously France, Germany, Spain, Italy, and so on. Any particular countries which stand out, which you think, yeah, I've got to check out the Vatican?
Vatican is definitely on my list. I definitely want to check out the Sistine Chapel. I have an obsession with Florence as well. But Europe has always been, I think, is the fact being in America, we always go and oh, we always have to go there. And you can pick any country, and there's always something in one of them that I want to go visit. So I'm like, yeah, there's an entire list. Not a bucket list because I'm hoping to do it sooner rather than later, just a big list of countries.
Absolutely. So in terms of the public, you've already spoken about how people are actually engage with you, and clearly what we're doing now is part of that public interface and so on. People can listen again to the podcast and such like. Now we are in a post-COVID world. Are you a keen aficionado of book conventions, author signings, book signings, and so on? If Barnes and Noble are actually listening to this, say, we need to actually feature DC Gomez, they get on the phone, would you say, yeah, I'll be up for that? How do you feel about those whole aspects?
I love meeting people in public, like in actual conventions. I tend to do a lot of them. This year is probably one of the busiest I have since starting out. So I think I have at least one convention a month. So I'm going to Savannah next month for July. I'll be in Houston again. So I've been doing a whole bunch of different ones. So anybody interested can always check out the website. I'm always looking to meet with people. I think there's that connection of people talking books that makes it so exciting. There's nothing like it. Whether you're talking books about the author or anybody else, you tend to get lost in that world. And it's kind of the best feeling of having a common ground and this common dialogue that everybody goes, oh my God, did you read this book?
You mentioned earlier you're a keen fan of Neil Gaiman. Have you also encountered the work of Ben Aronovitch and his Rivers of London series and the other areas that come across within that, or is that something you've yet to encounter?
I've come across of it. He's on my TBR. So I realized the more time you talk to people, the more books they recommend. And I would love to be the person that can read a book a day. I tend to be a much slower reader. I tend just to digest it and fall
You
through it
savor the words, DC. You savor the
all the
words that have
time.
been crafted by the writer.
And I love it. I absolutely love it. I fell in love recently with audiobooks, but Neil Gaiman has been the reason why. Because his narrations are amazing. I was like, just talk to me. Just talk to me. I can listen to this all day. So it has been the reason that I'm able to kind of digest more books quickly. But other than that, I tend to get lost in them.
And your thoughts on the incarnation of the Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett Good Omens series, which of course has been made into an ongoing series these days.
Is so good and so exciting. One of the things that I did was because I write about the horror enforcements, everybody's like, are you going to read? I was like, no. I need to finish this series because I think I'm pretty sure if I would have read it before I wrote my books, I never would have finished. Absolutely would have been like, I think the imposter syndrome would have kicked in and were like, yeah, I can't finish that. So I am absolutely in love with it. I love the way they take it. I love their urban fantasies take to it. I'm like, I can live in this universe. I'm all in.
Well, of course, as we said, Neil Gaiman co-wrote that with the late Terry Pratchett. What about co-authoring? If Neil Gaiman phoned you up and said, DC, fancy doing a joint collaboration, would you say yes, or would it be a case of, I don't know?
You know, in a heartbeat, I'm like, yeah, of course. What do you need me to do? Like, I'll hold the paper. Like, what are we doing? Absolutely be there.
Well, we'll put it out there. Certainly, I think The Sandman has picked up a lot of awards for its audio drama, which is, of course, from the Neil Gaiman aspect. And finally, just in terms of space fantasy, because I mean, obviously, urban fantasy by its very nature is set within our reality, our version of reality, etc. Ever been tempted to actually write a space opera motion? I'm thinking particularly with your military experience that clearly there's an awful lot of space opera which has its roots in the kind of future projections of our own military hardware.
I started playing with one a couple of years ago. I was going to put it as part of an anthology. So I had the whole outline going. And then I got a call from the anthology. It's like, that's too long. You got to change it. I was like, oh, okay, that's not going to work. So that got shelved back to it. I think I might eventually go back and look into it. But usually I'm very much detail and or deadline oriented. So I need to have a project that is focused into something in order to kind of give it so much time, just because I have a lot on my plate.
DCGomez-author.com. Is that still the best place to go to find out more details about your good self? Or would you say no? Check out my Instagram and TikTok videos.
You can check them all out, but I definitely send people to my website because you can get the free novella from there, The Origins of Constantine. You can pick it up from the website. You can also figure it out with all the other things I have going, like my next events. So usually my website is pretty safe. It is always under construction for anyone. I feel like it's like the highways in Texas. It's always under construction. So I don't know a website that it isn't.
Well, again, it works for that. And what about your podcast? How frequently do you actually podcast, and how can people access the past work of your good self?
You can actually get them every Monday night. A new episode comes up. So it's Inside the Minds of Authors for people who are wanting to know more about authors to chat. One of the fun things about it, every author does a short book reading. So if you're curious what they write, you can pick it up. And the good news is it's actually a link on my website. You can just download it and just binge the whole bunch of things of it. I think we're turning 150 episodes here in July.
Which is excellent. It's obviously ties in with Author of the Week as well, from that point of view, which is a radio show and a podcast. So it all connects together. You can have both things combined. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self today, DC, and genuinely, I think, opened up a whole range of our aspects. What would the DC Gomez of 2023 say to the young, let's say, 8-year-old Dominican Republic-based DC Gomez? Growing up in Salem, Massachusetts.
Honestly, I would tell her to be okay to dream and dream big and not censor herself because it doesn't look achievable.
Makes perfect sense. Two final questions, hopefully not too traumatic. But first one, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh my God, I love it. You have amazing questions. I'm like, you have done a lot of homework. I am pretty impressed. Thank you. That's been amazing.
Well, it was a hectic time, but I also had a 7-hour car journey to get here. What should normally take about 2.5 hours basically got locked into gridlock and all sorts of things. So I was a little bit panicky in terms of whether I'd make it, but I did. Positivity, it goes there. That's the important thing. So the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not too distant future? Will you come back with more DC Gomez goodness?
Oh my God, absolutely. You tell me when. I'd love to be here. I have so much fun. Thank you so much for having me, Alex. It's been such a pleasure. I'm like, these are really awesome questions. Yes, I'll be here.
Gut health, not just good health, but gut health. Well, of course, we hope it will be gut health because we are in the middle of obviously Healthy Eating Week. And new research has found that UK adults are not doing enough to ensure our guts are as healthy as the rest of our body. So we're delighted to welcome nutritionist and prebiotic expert dietitian from Gut Feeling to share her own thoughts on the rationale of this health crisis that we could conceivably be heading for. Of course, we're speaking to Cara Lando. How are you, Cara?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm great.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, but a little bit sad to find that this research by YouGov and indeed Moju has found that nearly 3/4 of us are not eating the recommended amount of plants needed to fuel the gut. So even when we're feeling full, the majority of us are running on empty. Is this all about the nutrition? We're not doing ourselves justice.
Absolutely. I think it's also around understanding. We found that 9 out of 10 Brits didn't even know that they should be aiming for 30 grams or more of dietary fiber each day, and less than 1 in 5 knew that they should be aiming for 30 or more plant varieties per week. So if people don't even know what they should be going for, then it's no wonder that then they're not attaining it, and then they're not reaping the benefits that would come from looking after their gut health.
If we've got poor fuel, it's perhaps no surprise that we can also end up suffering from anxiety, insomnia, trouble concentrating, headaches, sugar cravings, poor mood. The list goes on. Skin issues and tiredness, of course, bloating, and of course, irregular bowel movements. These are all, in a sense, signifiers that we really do need to do something to avoid this. So, what can we do, Cara?
We definitely should be trying to get more prebiotics into our diet. And prebiotics are the food for the probiotics. I think a lot of the time when people think of gut health, they go straight to those live bacteria, the probiotics, and think about things like yogurt and kefir, and they miss out on feeding all the good gut bacteria that you already all naturally have inside your gut. And those live bacteria are craving for you to feed them prebiotics, which is their fuel source. And prebiotics are found in a lot of higher fiber foods. So you think about fresh fruits and vegetables, legumes, grains, nuts and seeds. And then they're also found in some slightly more obscure ingredients that are the really rich sources of them. And they're in foods like green bananas, so when your banana is a little bit less ripe, chicory root, Jerusalem artichoke. And I know they might not be the things that people get super excited about because they're like, I probably don't really eat that. But there are now, thankfully, products that are coming onto the market in bar form or Moju's gut health shot that actually pull together all these really nutrient dense ingredients, and then they give them to you in like really tasty formats. So you can also get them in ready to go items.
And I see, Cara, you've actually come up with five top pieces of advice in terms of keeping a good gut health going. Perhaps not surprisingly, in at number five, be sure to exercise regularly. Clearly, healthy mind, healthy body, it does actually help, because clearly we can take in all the nutrition, but if we're not actually doing our exercises, then you will probably not get a great mood environment set up.
Absolutely. And we actually know that certain types of exercise can be really valuable to your gut bacteria. So we know that when we do things that calm us, so it's not just about vigorous exercise, actually going for a walk in the sunlight, doing yoga has been shown to be really valuable for helping increase the diversity of the bacteria in our gut. And that means we have lots of different strains that are able to live and thrive. And with that is where we reap the most benefits in terms of having good gut health.
I always say that keeping kidneys healthy is fairly important. And one way we can actually do that is ensuring that we drink plenty of water, especially, no doubt, when we're actually likely to be dehydrating. So drinking plenty of water is your fourth major tip, of course.
Definitely want people to increase their fluid intake and their water intake particularly. Water is really valuable also as you're trying to get more dietary fiber into your diet. It's really good for helping that fiber bind together and move slowly down through your digestive tract so that you don't get blocked up and that you actually reap the benefits from a digestive perspective.
A lot of debate over the last few decades about the whole notion of food supplements, but I see that you also would recommend consuming probiotics and prebiotics in a way that obviously means we don't necessarily have to worry too much about getting all of the foodstuffs that we need.
So it's all about, ideally, we're pulling in way more whole foods into our diet. So, you know, looking for the fruits and the vegetables, like I said, keep the skin on, the peel on where you can, go for lots of different colors. And then when it comes to supplements, what I often say is there's actually really cool functional foods and beverages that are available. So what that means is that companies have developed products that sort of work in a place that you would have already been eating or drinking something, rather than feeling like you have to add another pill or powder into your diet. And that way you can have, like I mentioned, a bar or a gut health shot, and you can just kind of keep going with your day and weave it in as another option. And those functional foods and beverages are often made from whole food options. So it means you're going to get the whole matrix of nutrients that come from a food rather than just one isolate.
I mean, there are two tips really which you can combine for numbers two and one, really. Don't be afraid to try new things, but also keep the plate colourful. I mean, it's, again, an interesting line to take.
I think that, you know, when we're younger and often like parents with children, we'll try to keep the plate colourful and exciting to get people to try new foods and new foods. But then as we get older, we sort of become creatures of habit, and people go to the grocery store and they buy the same things on repeat, and they just kind of get out of the mode of saying, I'm going to try something new. So what I would say is next time you're going shopping, when you have your trolley in front of you and you're going to grab one type of apple as an example, why not reach over next to it to a different type of apple or to a pear or to another fruit as an example, and just for that week, try to bring in one new thing. You might really enjoy it and realize, wow, I've been missing that for so many years. You might come back to something that you had as a child that you, again, just sort of forgot about. Or you might be introduced to something new and realize, wow, there's more foods in this world that I can enjoy. And ultimately, your gut bacteria are going to thank you for that.
Which, of course, brings us around to that classic phrase, of course, if you're good to your gut will be good to you, or variations on that thing. Cara, where can people find out further details about your own work and indeed this survey and so on?
So they can find me at The Prebiotic Dietitian, and Moju has more information around the data that we collected. So definitely go to both of those online, and any government site that has trusted information would also be recommended.
Yeah, surprised to find that hashtag gut health has nearly 5 billion views on TikTok. So not sure whether you'd actually make a pop video or a short sort of routine about the esophagus and the ileum and the duodenum and such like. But I don't know, maybe, Cara, it's a whole new area we could explore.
There you go. Great idea.
For the moment, Cara Lando, nutritionist extraordinaire, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thanks for having me.
I think it was John McEnroe back in the 20th century referred to an umpire as being the pits of the earth. Different line entirely. We're now talking about armpits, and indeed how maybe we need to celebrate armpits more and more. What is there such a thing as a perfect pitch when it comes to the whole system? Well, this ties in with a new initiative from Dove, and to actually talk us through the importance of how maybe we should be celebrating underarm beauty, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Soma. Indeed, Dr. Christina Samadakis. How are you, Dr. Christina?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for having me. I love that introduction.
Oh, well, thank you. No, it's interesting, though, this Arms Up series. I mean, why is it that basically, in general, opening conversational gambits, we don't say, let's talk about armpits?
Yeah, like you said, if anything, there's an expression that's the pits, and it's usually negative. But I think, like you pointed out, they're referring to a different kind of pit. But you're right. Like armpits are something that traditionally we don't talk about because they're smelly and hairy, and maybe people are ashamed of that. Those are some inherent qualities of the armpit. But the truth is, everyone has them, and they're very useful. And Dove did some research, and actually the results are quite disheartening in that they found that 8 out of 10 women report some kind of underarm skin issue, which is, you know, a huge majority, and that 2 out of 3 are self-conscious about it. And then that means that they also feel self-conscious about not talking to their friends or family about those concerns. So they kind of conceal them. I think when they found out what a big issue this is for women, Dove, you know, is always at the forefront of creating diverse campaigns that celebrate the body. And so they've launched this initiative called the Arms Up series. It features real women and body positivity advocates. And they've taken these gorgeous fashion shoot style portraits of armpits. And it just showcases the diversity of different armpits. You'll see women who choose to have hairy armpits, who have armpit stubble, who have bumps, who have different darker color armpits than their normal skin tone. And I think it just shows that, you know, the armpits that you might consider a perfect armpit are probably airbrushed and are not representative of what the majority of people have.
Yes, I think there was a fashion a few years ago, certainly, that if you had armpits and you were female, you needed to shave those armpits. And thankfully, I think we've probably moved on from that. But in terms of actually caring for the skin, I mean, I'm conscious that really, just because of the physics of the whole thing, presumably there's a lot of friction that can manifest in armpits. So soreness, dryness, itchiness, all of those things presumably can add to allergies. They can create problems, I would have thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. You know, as a dermatologist, I'm here to support people when they have skin problems. And it's not uncommon for people to have issues that are skin-wide, including the armpits or specifically part of the armpits. And I think that's why, like you said, friction is a big part of that. Number two is it's a very kind of cavernous, wet, moist environment with the glands that are there and the sweating that occurs. And then on top of that, people tend to do practices that can irritate the skin, such as shaving or waxing the skin. So optimizing skincare is really paramount there. And looking after your skin, you can't expect to just, you know, have a rusty old razor, shave, and then not look after the skin and not expect some kind of irritation that's there. So the novel thing about Dove is, in response to this and in response to, you know, over 20 years of research, they've developed a new type of deodorant that has, number one, the antiperspirant aspect, which is important. Number two, the deodorizing aspect, which is important. You can get it in a variety of fragrances. And number three, and this is the new innovative thing as well, is that they now have this triple moisturizing technology, 100% natural sunflower seed oil, plus vitamin E, omega-6, and glycerin to really care for the skin so that it's more adept to face all the challenges that anatomy presents.
And moisturizing, obviously a critical part of the whole process. Are these issues relatable to men as well, or is it just primarily females that we're talking about here?
That's so interesting that you bring it up, because although this research was for females, it absolutely is an issue that affects everyone. We all have a similar anatomy, that the armpit is a high friction site. And even males end up in the news all the time. I don't know if you saw over the weekend, but one of the football players from the championship had his jersey, sports jersey, torn, and the cameras caught that he had a shaved armpit. And it was all over the news that a man has a shaved armpit. So, you know, armpits are still creating quite a fashion or social statement, and still end up creating quite a lot of conversation and discussion.
Yeah, indeed. Now, again, we're in the midst of the summer. We may be having several heat waves in terms of how things are going. What would you advise people who wish to actually ensure that they care for their armpits and hopefully sort of ensure that they are having a healthy approach to the whole thing? What would be the top tips from your good self, Dr. Soma?
Yeah. So I think tip number one is, if you have an actual medical issue that's bothering you in your armpit, make sure and see a doctor. Number two, if you're feeling self-conscious about more cosmetic issues in nature, please check out the Arms Up series. You'll see that actually there's such a diversity that you probably fall in the category of what is quote unquote a normal armpit, and you shouldn't let it hold you back from doing activities and enjoying the summer. And then number three, in terms of actual skincare, make sure and moisturize your armpit. Pick a deodorant that is kind to the skin, like the new Dove Advanced Care ones. And I guess finally, I'd say, if you are someone who shaves your armpit, make sure and have a clean razor that you change regularly.
Yeah, but essentially, I would have thought it's just to prevent infection and all sorts of other areas. Absolutely. That could conceivably create skin irritation. It is our largest organ, after all.
That's right, it is. And the most visible one. So it has such a great function, not only function as an organ, but it also has this cosmetic function.
Fascinating. I never thought we'd actually be doing a full feature on armpits, but there we are. We've just done so. Dr. Christina, where can people actually find out further details about the survey and indeed your own connections in the wonderful virtual world of the web?
Oh, well, thanks so much. Yeah, I share lots of educational content about skin on Instagram under Dr. Soma Skin. And then you can find information about the campaign if you Google Arms Up series by Dove, and you'll get to see all the beautiful photographs that are there. And then also, if you go on the Dove website, you'll find information about the survey and the new advanced care deodorant.
Dr. Christina Somadakis, a.k.a. Dr. Soma, huge thanks. And may your armpits always be a source of endless fascination.
Thanks. Same to you. Bye.
That they're your friend. Believe them, you need them. Watch round the river bend. Make sure that you're receiving the signals they send. Cause brother, you've only got two hands to lend. Maybe someone makes you move. Some nights you loom up ahead when you're asleep. Some days there's things on your mind you should keep. Sometimes it's tougher to look than to leave. Watch out for the skin deep. Better watch out for the skin deep. Brother, watch out. Watch out for the skin deep. Brother, watch out. Watch out for the skin deep. Better watch out for the skin deep. Day, the track that you're climbing gets steep. Your emotions are frayed and your nerves are starting to creep.
remember the days, as long as the time that you keep. Brother, you better watch out for the skinny.
After all the loves of my life, you'll into my hands and I will use it. I will win the worship in your eyes and I will lose it. I will have the things that I desire. The sky, and after all the loves of my life, oh, after all the woes of my life, I'll be thinking of you and wondering why. In the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down.